You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 7th, 2017, and episode number 301. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode last week where I talked about everything pretty much from the history of this show, the Paranormal News Insider, from past to present. And all of that excitement, I guess, I forgot one little piece of news, but we'll talk about that tonight. We're also going to talk about the North Dakota Bigfoot. Well, he's back, kind of. A UFO was found at a NASA facility, kind of. And MUFON sighting statistics for January and a breakdown of last week's rodent prognosticators. And we'll find out if there's a solution on the horizon for the aflocalypse. Yeah, the aflocalypse. And we'll also have the book of the week, which is actually what I forgot to talk about last week. Kind of embarrassing when I thought about it. I was kind of mad about it. I didn't realize until a little while later that I forgot this book, and it was perfect. It fit in with the episode. But again, we'll talk about that as we go through tonight. And tonight's episode is brought to you by Chum Bucket Studios. Chum Bucket Studios offers professional, high-quality digital products from prints to movies. Printing signs, videos, video editing, even website graphics, and much more. It all begins with a little imagination. Check them out today at chumbucketstudios.com. One word, chumbucketstudios.com. And Jay Baterton, who oversees Chum Bucket Studios, has designed the logo and t-shirts and a lot of other goodies for the upcoming event, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And I just got my shirt in the mail yesterday. I'm really excited about it. I have mountains of clothes all over the place. I don't know why, but I love t-shirts and I love collecting t-shirts from wherever I go or things that I'm involved in. And I had to have this one. Just had to have it. Really cool shirt. Really cool logo. I only wish it said Intense on it, but that's okay. Maybe next time. So some anomalous notes here. I just mentioned the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Well, just announced, Alexander Petikov will be presenting Sasquatch Out of the Woods, a documentary on Sasquatch. And that'll be taking place during the event. I'm going to guess probably Saturday night. Saturday night was like movie night. We had a little bit of fun. We stayed up late, a little too late, and had some fun. It was good times. And we did watch movies. Wait, we watched anything Friday? I don't remember. Anyway, there'll be some other documentaries to watch. And again, you're going to get great presenters, myself included. Also returning are, Stan Gordon, Steve Coles, myself, and Jay Baterton will be speaking this year. Very knowledgeable guy, knows this stuff, and is looking for the truth. It's out there. Rosemary Ellen Guiley will also be presenting, as will author Ronald L. Murphy. And he's had a couple of books of the week here on the Paranormal News Insider over the course of the last couple of months. And we know that Trapper John Tice from the Mountain Monsters TV show will also be there. And you might want to get your tickets quickly. They're going to start moving fast because also just announced is a big contest with big prizes. Now, anyone who buys a ticket in advance including those who've already bought tickets, will have his or her name, or the person's name they bought the ticket for, placed in a drawing. Now, this includes anyone who's already purchased tickets for the event. You must purchase a two-day pass with the cookout, a Saturday-only pass with the cookout, or a Sunday-only pass. So essentially, one ticket equals one entry into the contest. I'm excited about this. The drawing will take place during the 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, and the winner must be present to collect his or her prize. So I guess the more tickets you buy, the more chances you have to win. Makes sense, right? The contest does not apply to anyone buying a ticket at the door the day of the event. So you want to get your tickets in advance. Now, you wonder, well, what's in this big prize? What's this big prize? Well, the prize package includes a 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure t-shirt, which I've already mentioned. Awesome shirt. A 2017 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure 11x17 poster, which I will be happy to sign. A 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure 11x17 poster. So you get last year's and this year's posters, which I'll sign them both. A Bigfoot Crossing sign, which I won one of those last year at the their big thing. They're just, everyone was bidding, the bidding war last year. A bottle of Squatch Sauce marinade sauce, compliments of Sasquatch sauce. A limited framed digital art print designed and created by Jay Baterchin and Chum Bucket Studios. Huh. And you'll also get a replica copy of a Pennsylvania Bigfoot cast. Yeah, that's cool. And you'll also get a Boggy Creek Monster t-shirt donated by Small Town Monsters, who probably more than likely will also be presenting that weekend. Documentary or two or three. And you also get a Boggy Creek Monster DVD, also donated by Small Town Monsters. That's a pretty good deal just for buying a ticket. You have a chance at winning all that stuff. And I may throw one of my books in that prize pot. I don't know. I still got to send some books out that way. This is a charity event. All the proceeds will go to benefit local charities, including a couple of animal-based ones, which touches my heart. So I'm excited to really push this and help these guys out, not just because I'm speaking there, but because this is a charitable event, and it does impact local charities very heavily. And they were very, very gracious of the crowds that were present last year. And they both, actually all three of the charities that were part of this last year were all present and were intermingling with the crowd. And it was a great feeling to participate in something like this, to educate the general public as well as help local charities. Now, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, the ParanewsInsider.com website, where I list events, you can email me. Do people still email? I don't know. Insider@ParanewsInsider.com, or you can go to ParanewsInsider.com and click on the contact tab there and let me know. It's that easy. I mean, I'm pretty much anywhere and everywhere, all over the internet. There's no excuse to not get a hold of me. So, what else do I have here? An anomalous notes. It's my new little name for the segment, by the way. Oh, I received an email, a couple of emails actually, from Lloyd Auerbach about a number of classes that he is participating in, but I'm going to talk about that a little later in the show here. And we're going to jump right into cryptid news. This is a follow-up of a story from earlier this month, actually January 17th, Paranormal News Insider Show, episode number 298. I discussed the original story where a woman had seen a large, hairy, and scary-looking monster outside of her window. She called a friend of hers, Christopher Bauer, who was an experienced animal tracker, out to investigate. He ended up finding 18-inch long by 8-inch wide tracks in, I guess there was a little bit of snow up there in North Dakota at the time. And this animal also had a 4-foot stride. That's pretty long. So about double of what the average person can do right there. And these tracks, he was able to follow for around 7 miles, which was the, to me, was the big significant thing here. I could have taken the story or left it. But as soon as I find out that he tracked this for 7 miles, he's an experienced tracker. 7 miles, that's pretty significant. It's not unprecedented. This has happened a number of times, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. I've heard a number of stories where tracks have gone on for a number of miles like this. But now, an update to this story, an anonymous letter, which is kind of anomalous, kind of came out of nowhere here. I mean, the story broke. I talked about it January 17th. It happened around Christmas time. It didn't really gain any traction until around, I think, after New Year's, really. Nobody really talked about it. But this anonymous letter was sent to an NBC affiliate. I guess, no, they would be ABC. Network affiliate from Fargo, North Dakota, stating that the Bigfoot tracks were created not as a hoax, but of a prank. It's kind of a weird twist. Like, I didn't see this one coming. Kind of a, you think this one was cut and dry, and you kind of thought, well, you know, it's just going to kind of play itself out, and we'll never hear about it again. But now a strange, anomalous, anonymous letter turns up. Weird. Now, there's also a photograph included in this letter. I guess it was an email. I don't know. It doesn't really say. Well, no, it was an actual physical letter because they photographed this letter on WDAY, their website, the ABC network affiliate out of Fargo. And on the photograph of the letter, you can read a little bit. They kind of go all over the place, but you can read a little bit of it where the person wrote, quote, "I had screwed these wooden feet to an old pair of shoes. I then walked on the wheel tracks to the road, to the farm, knowing full well traffic would erase any sign of how I approached and left. Once at the farmstead, I noticed the lights on in the house and tried to see if anyone was up, but the shade was pulled. I decided I was there, so I just as well finish, lights or not. I walked around the house trying to leave prints in what little snow was there. As I was crossing in front of the house, I noticed my friend's female friend walk past the window. She happened to look out the window, and I froze. Busted. I thought she looked directly at me. It seemed then quickly she turned and went back the way she came, and I took off," unquote. Well, not only do they have kind of bad grammar, the person also admitted that they were drunk at the time they purportedly put these shoes on and walked around this person's house. Now, the person also sent a photograph of the shoes that they used with the pieces of wood placed at the bottom. And these were like high top shoes. Obviously a younger person here. So then you have to wonder, I mean, is this legit? Is this letter really the end of the story? I mean, is this how it's going to go? I mean, was it a hoax? And this poor Christopher Bauer kind of fell for this. Well, they asked Christopher Bauer, and he, I think, is a little upset. He's a little mad. I mean, I get that. I understand his apprehension to believe this story. Well, he finds the inconsistencies in the letter version, and he thinks that this is the real hoax, that this person who sent in this letter and photograph, they're the hoaxer. Not the hoaxer who created the hoax, but the hoaxer who's hoaxing after the fact. Does that make any sense? No, I didn't think it would. But essentially, he thinks, Christopher Bauer, that is, thinks that a real Bigfoot left these tracks, and this person is just trying to discredit the fact that a Bigfoot was actually there by creating a hoaxed letter and sending it into this ABC network affiliate. Kind of a weird, twisted tale here. It sounds like a nice little made-for-television movie here. He doesn't think that this person is being very truthful, and he's trying to dispel the notion that Bigfoot could really be in the area, even though this is pretty much the only sighting. Now, Bauer states that the tracks could not have been faked with a 4-foot stride for over 7 miles. especially for someone who was admittedly drunk. While the person states that they started and stopped at the road, Barrow was able to follow the tracks beyond the road for another 7 miles. So again, this leaves us to wonder, who is telling the truth here? Or is there really any truth to this story at all? Is everybody lying? Is everybody making this up? Maybe Bigfoot's sitting out there going, what are these people talking about? I never even went to that house. I don't know. It just seems kind of weird, and it's not a huge surprise. It's kind of a little bit of a left hook. I didn't see that one coming. I figured there was more to the story, and I kind of waited for it, but didn't think it would kind of go this direction. Well, we'll see what happens. Now, Christopher Bauer is asking that this person reveal themselves. And one would think, I'm just thinking out loud here, if they know the person in the house, then the person in the house probably knows who this person was that pulled off this prank. So I think the story will evolve some way or the other if Christopher Bauer also knows this person, the female person. So I think all this is going to – all this would play out. And I don't know why they couldn't just play it out since they probably all know somebody who knows each other. It's kind of a weird kind of situation. Why would they send it to the network affiliate like that instead of just – I don't know. It's just kind of weird. The whole story is weird. But yeah, you cannot fake a 4-foot stride with wooden shoes, and it would be a dead giveaway as well. I think anybody who knows anything about tracking would be instantly able to discern a genuine footprint by a bipedal human type of creature and fake wooden prints that would be repeated, not really change. I mean, there would be some big differences there, pretty obvious differences in the tracks from something that would change versus something that would be pretty static, and it would be pretty much the same thing. And even around somebody's house and a yard for a drunk guy to do, it'd be pretty amazing feat, to be honest. So again, we'll keep an eye on this to see how it continues to develop. Now we're going to jump to UFO news. A couple of interesting stories here. But before I jump too far, I don't want to jump and trip and fall. So I'm going to throw a link here in the chat room here. So if you're live and you're in the chat room, you're going to get these links pretty quick. I do normally put these out through Facebook, but I kind of stretch them out throughout the week after the show has been posted. And some of these links are not the same ones you're going to see if you go to paranormal news sites. Some of them tend to create their own thing through their own message boards, and or they write their own stories, or they just throw one link out there. And I do the research to find kind of one of the sources to any of these stories. So I'm giving you kind of a source, and obviously one of the sources here would be WDAY, which is the radio station and television station out of Fargo that is really – they received the letter. So they're kind of in the middle of all this, and they're the ones that reported on this earlier this year. So things like that, you're going to get a little bit behind-the-scenes information. And now we're going to jump to UFO news. Okay. So last week, if you remember, I talked about the purported alien abduction that was caught on satellite imagery. Yeah, the guy who claims that he was fighting off this alien and punched him in the nose or whatever. He recognized himself wearing the same t-shirt and black hat, although it was extremely blurry. And yeah, it could have been a homeless guy beating up Ronald McDonald for all. I don't know. You can't really get any detail. I don't know what this guy's talking about. Anyway, another eagle-eyed viewer of satellite imagery has found what appears to be a UFO on the ground, just parked, just sitting there, just hanging out, doing nothing. Well, this UFO is located, of all places, at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory near Los Angeles, California. I mean, my goodness. I guess the secret's it's right there. Look, it's right there. Right out in the open, right near the largest city in the United States. Not out in the desert, not Area 51, not in Dayton, hidden in a hangar. No, it's just sitting right out there, right there on the top of a hill, plain view. Wow, who would have thought? I guess hide something in plain sight. That's the best way to hide it, right? Wow, UFO history. Well, the YouTube channel, well, I guess he's a user. Name Shame is the user ID. Shared the Google Earth screen cap on his YouTube channel on Wednesday, February 1st. Now, after that, it went viral. And stories of UFO cover-ups and a newly discovered smoking gun right there in the parking lot made their rounds. It's still going on. People are still talking about it. Now, Scott C. Waring of the UFO Sightings Daily website said, quote, it's in the perfect position where no one would be able to see it since it's on a hilltop at the highest point in the city with mountain walls on all sides and a military fence around the facility. So what we have here is an alien craft being experimented on at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And since it's parked outside, it's probably parked there because it's too much trouble to move it back and forth nightly for test flights, unquote. Well, never mind that there are houses on both sides of the facility and two different neighborhoods within 100 yards of the object and a valley full of houses and people just below the facility. It wouldn't take much for anybody to see this. If this was actually an alien spacecraft, a pair of binoculars would do it. Well, never mind the fact that the small building, the JPL, this is used for radio data testing. It's not really a UFO holding ground. I think there would be much better locations out there to do this. Anyway, well, if it sounds too good to be true, well, there's a reason. The image of this circular object has been visible from satellite images dating back to November of 2009. Which matches the current image used in the stories and video. However, since April of 2014, the mysterious round object moved from the asphalt area to a grassy area next to the small facility that is part of the Mesa Antenna Array facility in the hills surrounding the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and is designated as the 212 East Antenna Range. One small photo from the JPL website of the 212 East Antenna Range shows part of the object in a photo. Whoops. Maybe they should have looked at that first. Sorry, Scott. You should have been looking. I did my homework. Did you? Well, the object in the photo is probably around the 2009 to mid-2013 range, where the object is at the end of the asphalt area and when the website was actually last updated. A lot of people were speculating about what the object was, UFO or not. And the website UFO Interest, which is the same one that I mentioned last week, they busted the satellite photograph of the purported alien abduction. And they stated that this is more than likely not a UFO. No kidding. Seemed to kind of, I don't know. I was just waiting on somebody to actually provide some sort of photographic evidence or anything like that. I kind of ignored the story for a little bit until UFO Interest took an interest in the story, and he started to talk to a lot of different people. And I finally made my way onto Google Earth and kind of crept around a little bit. And that's where I looked at the dated satellite history, went back in time. Which you can do. There's a little slider thing up there in the top left. If you just move that back and forth, you can look at previous satellite data, and I've done that before for a couple of stories that I've covered here on the Paranormal News Insider. And Dr. Nasser Chahat, who is an employee of the JPL, well, he kind of solved this whole thing very quickly. Well, he took a photograph with himself and another worker and responded to UFO Interest, basically showing the whole world this object in the grass, upside down. It's essentially a satellite dish. Yeah, it's flat. It's not very big. Now, one of the I don't know who it was here. I don't see the link. Anyway, they thought it was I think the Daily Mail. They said it was some kind of storage container. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never seen a round, flat storage container. I don't know what you're going to put into that thing, unless it's what they mean is it's something that's buried in the ground. But I don't think that's what it is because it's moved. It's moved a couple of times, but it's not because they're taking it out on nightly flights. I think it's just because it's something that's just stored outside because why put it inside? It's meant to be outside. It's probably just some old satellite dish. Now, I've asked Dr. Nasir Chahat if it was an old satellite or what it was, and he's not responded to me yet. That's okay. I get it. I mean, I'm just speculating. That's a piece of equipment that's no longer in use or currently not in use. That's part of that little building, that little facility, the 212 East Antenna Range area, where this is where a lot of our early satellites were tested, and some of our long-range equipment that's gone out into outer space was first tested at this facility. So they were just testing the radios. Not really. I mean, what would a UFO be doing there? Kind of weird. I don't know. I just work here. So if you want to see a picture, let me get that picture of Dr. Nasir Chahat. I'm going to throw that in the chat room. And again, I'll be posting this up there. Boom, there it is. That's a UFO, kids. I don't know. It looks like a satellite dish to me. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm not really too familiar with satellite dishes. I don't have DirecTV or anything like that. But I don't know. It doesn't Not sure. Anyway, we're going to continue on with the UFO theme. We're still in the UFO stuff here. We're going to talk MUFON stats. MUFON, I hope you know. If you don't know, MUFON stands for Mutual UFO Network, where they're one of the largest UFO research organizations in the world. And they're known throughout the world, but primarily here in the United States, where they've been here for quite a while. And I'm fortunate enough to know a person, Audrey Hamilton, who is a fan of the show. And I've told her I've had some interesting issues with obtaining the data. Usually I would get it about 10 to 15 days afterward. And sometimes it was a little longer than that. And then there for a while, last year, the year before, I wasn't getting it at all. I don't know what was going on. And I emailed a couple of different people. And through different channels, I was able to get away with getting the data, sometimes a couple of days or weeks after I should have. But Audrey's been extremely gracious in sending me the email pretty much immediately after she gets it. A lot of times early in the morning, which was like, yes, I've got the data. And it's great. It's great information. I think it's not going to change the world. It's not going to prove that UFOs exist, but it's good to track this kind of data to keep an eye on where things are being reported. And it's not completely scientific. Yes, it's statistics, but it's not, again, it's not going to prove anything beyond the shadow of a doubt. And what they do is they compile a list of countries that report to MUFON. So they break that down, and obviously the United States is always number one. And the reason for that is a lot of other countries have their own reporting agencies, and some of them are government controlled. So people will call their local government before they're going to call some organization in the United States. So it's I think it is good. It is a good step for researchers, and it does give you a little bit clearer picture of the UFO phenomena as it happens month to month. You can see kind of trends. And a couple of years ago, they had a huge spike in UFO reports, but that wasn't because there was more UFOs. It was just because MUFON got a little bit more of attention through a TV show they had called Hangar One. And the world, specifically here in the United States, got a little bit more of a view of them. And so now I have the stats, and we can talk about the stats. So looking at December, which finished the year last year, 539 worldwide reports, and there was 405 U.S. reports. And before I give you January stats. It's the bottom of the hour, so it's time for me to tell you that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I'm right in the middle of a story here. That's kind of why I dragged that out, that little intro. That's why I dragged it out for 3 minutes. Well, it was like a minute and a half. It felt like 3 minutes. Anyway, the month of December, again, 539 sightings with 405 documented here in the United States. Well, that's where I'm at. I don't know where you're at. Hopefully you're somewhere nice and warm. Now, looking at last month's numbers, there was 580 total worldwide sightings with 404 occurring in the United States. Now, I know there's a couple people out there that are keeping tabs at home, and they're wondering where that fits in with my stats. Some people have it written down. They've been waiting for these numbers. So in case you're keeping tabs at home, last month I predicted 516 worldwide sightings and 398 U.S. sightings. So I was a little bit off with the worldwide. 516 is my guess, and it was 539. That's still really not too bad. But the 398 of mine versus the 405 actual, that's pretty darn close. 98% accurate. It's pretty good. Sign me up. Well, with the United States having 398 of the total 516 reports, the United Kingdom, they were second with 53 reports. Yeah, it drops off pretty dramatically. Canada was third with 45. Australia was next with 13. And Germany had 8. A total of 35 countries turned in reports for January, with 18 of those only turning in one report each. Now, a breakdown of state by state shows an interesting break with tradition. I've been waiting for this. I don't know how long. Typically, California leads as the top state in sightings, as it should, because it is the largest state per population. So the number should be as high if you're looking at per capita. However, last month, Texas led the way in January with 52 reports. Florida was second with 49, and California finished third with 39 reports. Pennsylvania, New York, and North Carolina were next with 17 reports each. Washington had 14. That's Washington State. Arizona and Michigan had 13 each, and New Mexico and Tennessee had 10 reports each. Georgia and Colorado finished with 9 reports each. Louisiana, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Indiana had 8. Virginia, Minnesota, and Missouri had 7 each. And Nevada finished January with 6 reports. Now, if I didn't name your country, your current state that you're living in, that's because they had 5 or less reports. And 26 remaining states, including the District of Columbia, turned in 5 or less reports each. And what I like to do is I like to look at per capita. So this is looking at these UFO sightings, and you essentially divide it by the population of said state, and then multiply it by – typically per capita is done by 100,000 people. So I look at it, how many sightings per 100,000 people, and it gives you a percentage based obviously on the number of sightings. And it kind of offers you a glance at which state actually had more sightings than others per capita. So it's what state was interesting versus other states. Now, if you look at Texas, which finished first with 52 sightings, they had a per capita of 0.192. 0.192. That's not very significant whatsoever. That's like somebody's leg. It's not even a whole person here. Florida, which finished second with 49 sightings, finished with a 0.246. That's pretty good. Still not overwhelming. And to kind of give you kind of an appreciation for this, California, which normally is number one, they had 39 reports. They finished with a 0.1 per capita. That's pretty low. And looking back, December of last year, New Mexico, they finished with a 0.527 with just 11 sightings. So a half a person out of every 100,000 people saw a UFO in New Mexico 2 months ago. And typically our winner is usually around that. I think the highest I've ever documented here is Vermont with a 1.12 with 7 sightings. So one person out of every 100,000 people in Vermont saw a UFO back in August of 2016. But looking back here in January, North Carolina finished with a 0.171 with 17 sightings. Arizona with a 0.193 with their 13 sightings. The big winner was New Mexico this month. They only had 10 sightings, so it's not really majorly significant. But a 0.479, pretty close to half a person per every 100,000 people. Or you could say one in every 200,000 people in New Mexico reported a UFO. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that New Mexico had a definitive UFO event or anything like that. That just merely means that in that month, those are the reports that were put in. Now, my knowledge of the reporting system, the computer methods that they use, it's essentially whenever that report is taken, that's the month that it's assigned to. It's not really assigned to, well, I reported in January, but this is an event that happened in February of 2004. So it's really not how it looks. So it's kind of, again, it's not scientific. It's not going to paint an exact picture for you, but it is interesting to kind of look at it in the per capita method. And MUFON used to do this. They don't do it anymore. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's pretty much insignificant, but I like to do it because it's statistics. It does give you a nice little glance there. And no really major big stories came out of New Mexico that I know of as far as UFO sightings. I don't think, actually there was, now that I think about it, there was a sighting midway through the month that was actually test flares. And it happens just about every time this year in New Mexico. They know that, but they post it on the internet anyway to fool people. So anyway, that's the MUFON sighting statistics report for January 2017. And I know you're waiting for this part, and I messed up last month. My prediction for next month, February 2017, here it is. I'm going to go with total worldwide sightings, 527. Write that down, 527. And U.S. reports will go with 389. That's my prediction. Write it down, and we'll find out what happens next month. Now, I forgot last week, so I'm going to kind of cut it out here with the ghost section here, and we're going to talk the book of the week. And the book of the week was supposed to be last week. I'm not going to double it up this week. We're only going to do one. And the reason why this book was going to be the book of the week last week was this was actually the person who wrote this book was the second guest on the radio show, The Grand Dark Conspiracy. And I was the first. So I don't know. I just felt it was necessary to kind of go that route. I thought it was perfect. And the greatest thing about all this is this person's birthday was the day after this show was on the air. His birthday was last Wednesday. So it would have been a nice birthday gift for me to talk about his book on the air. But unfortunately, I forgot. Yeah. 527 worldwide, 389. You are right, Dita. Right? Is that right? I think so. Well, we'll go with that. 527, 389. That's what I said. That's what you, yeah. Okay. We got it. Okay. So anyway, the book of the week, that's where I'm at. Again, should have had this last week, but I kind of forgot. And again, this was the second guest of the Grand Dark Conspiracy, which is where the Paranormal News Insider was born from. And again, this is a special book anyway for the field, and one of my favorite books of all time, regardless of genre, regardless of fiction, nonfiction, any of that. This is a book that I almost stole from a library, and I had checked out, I don't know how long. I've gone through a digital copy of this, and now a 30th anniversary edition of this book is now available. Yes, and it's a book on parapsychology and ghost research. So if you haven't figured this out yet, well, the book of the week this week is, boom, there it is, ESP Hauntings and Poltergeists, A Parapsychologist Handbook by Lord Auerbach. And this book came out a long time ago, long before most people involved in this field right now were around, let alone were reading books. 1986 is when this book originally came out. And last year, he did a special 30th anniversary edition, which is essentially the same book. And you may wonder, well, what's the point of that? Well, first of all, the technology that he wrote this on wasn't easily available to convert to a book. It's obsolete technology. Big floppy disks. I get it. I have a whole box load of those in my closet. I know what it's like. It's really hard to convert any of that stuff unless you have the technology to do so. And to reformat everything, what a pain in the posterior. And one of the things with this book is, the reason why he didn't rewrite it is because a lot of it's already been rewritten. If you've followed Lloyd, if you've read any of his books, 2004, he released Ghost Hunting, How to Investigate the Paranormal. And kind of a lot of that was based on this book, ESP Hauntings and Poltergeist, the Parapsychologist's Handbook. A lot of this was pulled from that book. And also that year, Hauntings and Poltergeists, the Ghost Hunter's Guide, was also released. And that was another chunk of this book kind of put into another book. And it was a lot more easily digestible. It was a little bit too simplistic in my taste, to be honest with you. But it got the meaning across, and it got a lot of people to read his book. And this book doesn't really have a whole lot of updates. There are some minor updates to it, but essentially it's that 1986 book intact, which isn't a bad thing because it may be old, but it's not outdated. It's extremely good information. And it's about 340 pages, tons of information in this book. And if you are a ghost researcher and you take this field seriously, you better buy this book. That's all I really need to say about that. You got to buy this book. It's available through createspace.com. It's also available through amazon.com. Highly recommend this book. If you want to know anything, come on, 1986, you might say, well, what's the point? Well, Lloyd knows his stuff. A lot of people will say that. He was an unofficial mentor to me, somebody who answered early questions that I had about this field when I started back in 1996. And a lot of other people he's mentored in one way or the other. And he's still doing that to this day. As he's relaunching even more books. So he's continuing his information and his networking. Great, great news. His first book, Psychic Dreaming, will be re-released on April 8th of this year. And then he will relaunch Mind Over Matter on July 8th of this year. I have both of those books already, but I don't know. I'm still going to check them out. Now, both of these books have been out of print. And yeah, they're very good books, both. And Lloyd is also involved in some other paranormal-related classes. And if you're interested in learning from Lloyd other than reading the books, there's some really interesting classes that he has. He's a part of between the Ryan Research Center and the HCH Institute. And you can find more details about that at paranewsinsider.com and clicking on the events tab at the top. Again, ESP Hauntings and Poltergeists, a Parapsychologist Handbook, 30th Anniversary Edition by Lloyd Auerbach is the book of the week. This week, and why not next week or last week as well. It's a week overdue. But I've been waiting geez, quite a long time, at least 20 years on my part to have this book. So I guess a week isn't that bad of a deal to wait. Now, in other news, you might have heard about this last Thursday, the startling news out of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Yes, it's true. Punxsutawney Phil made his prediction for 6 more weeks of winter after seeing his shadow. And all the jokes about groundhog burgers and things like that were made, as typically. Now, I'm not a big believer in allowing a giant rodent to predict the weather, but I've always thought it's a pretty interesting topic. And it was fortunate, that's a good word, to have been able to visit Punxsutawney and see where not only Phil makes his home at the library downtown in Punxsutawney, but the little box. I always wanted to go there to what's called Gobbler's Knob. It's a couple miles away. It's not really all downtown there. You got to travel a little bit to find it. But I was really excited to see all that. It's really neat, even though it really is essentially meaningless, but I don't know. It's kind of cool. And eventually it'll be gone. You know, the animal rights people will eventually ban it, but it's still fun. Now, back in 2015, there was an interesting debate about these furry prognosticators. And I wrote about this, of all places, on my Facebook wall. The story goes, there were 33 groundhogs at the time, or woodchucks, marmots, of the large squirrel family belonging to the rodent order that year that made predictions on the February 2nd date, which is every year for these guys, in the United States and Canada. Of those, it was 16 for an early spring and 16 for 6 more weeks of winter. So there was a split. So the 33rd, it came down to a disputed claim. Were we going to have an early spring? We're going to have 6 more weeks of winter. What was going to happen? Jimmy the Groundhog of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. You might remember this. He initially turned in a disputed prediction. And this is the one where the mayor was bit on the ear. Probably remember that one. He made a hasty prediction of an early spring despite clear skies. Being clear weather, Jimmy should have seen his shadow and thus 6 more weeks of winter. Yet later in the day, the city gave an official statement that the mayor's interpretation stands. So we were awarded with an early spring. I don't think so. I think it snowed in April that year. But anyway, well, this year, there was 30 predictions made. Now, of those 30, 14 for 6 more weeks of winter, which included Punxsutawney Phil, our local hero, Buckeye Chuck of Ohio, Balzac Billy of Balzac, Alberta, Canada, Dunkirk Dave of New York, French Creek Freddy of West Virginia, Holtzville Hal of New York, Huddy the Hog from Kansas City, Missouri, Jimmy the Groundhog from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Thanks for voting this year. Lawrenceville Lucy from Pennsylvania. Manitoba Merv from, well, come on, he's from Manitoba. I don't have to tell you that. Octo Raro Orphy from Pennsylvania. Patty Pagoda of Pennsylvania. Western Maryland Murray from Cumberland, Maryland. And Winnipeg Wynn from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Those were the evil ones. They want 6 more weeks. Well, they saw their shadow. That the whole thing never made sense to me. If the sun's out, I say put some suntan lotion on and enjoy it. 14 groundhogs also predicted an early spring this year, including Chattanooga Chuck, Chesapeake Chuck from Virginia, Dover Doug of Pennsylvania, Fred Larmart from Quebec, Canada, and Fufu the Hedgehog from Portland, Oregon. General Beauregard Lee from Stone Mountain, Georgia, graded the groundhog who actually had Greta the groundhog standing in for him. I don't know. He's personal issues. He's just got to get the stuff ironed out. I don't know. Now, Greta, standing in for Grady, also predicted an Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl win. Whoops. And Grady and Grady, they're from Chimney Rock, North Carolina. And also predicting an early spring was Malvern Mel from New York, Queen Charlotte from Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, Queen Charlotte actually refused to leave her borough. Shubin Akati, Sam from Nova Scotia, Sir Walter Wally from Raleigh, North Carolina, Staten Island Chuck. Staten Island Chuck actually had a female stand-in for him. I don't know. I hope he's okay. I've heard some rumors about drinking. T-Boy, the Nutria from New Orleans, Louisiana, and Wharton Willie from Ontario, Canada also said early spring is on its way. Now, doing the math, that leaves us with a tie. Again, 14 each. But one of the groundhogs refused to leave her burrow. So now, what about these two other votes? Well, one, Archie from Moscow, Russia, made no forecast at all. Decided to sleep during the day. That's the official statement. Archie decided just to sleep the day away. Couldn't wake him. Hopefully, not too much vodka. Now, the other one, Pierre C. Chadeau. It's Chadeaux. The Nutria. I don't know. They like Nutria down there. I don't think they really do, but I don't know why they do. From New Iberia, Louisiana, predicted an early summer. Yeah, an early summer, not early spring. So it looks like the majority rules, barely, that we'll actually have an early spring. If you add all these guys together and you do the research, forget Punxsutawney Phil. He's a minority. He doesn't speak for the other groundhogs and the other nutria that that voted. So that's my look on this year's things here. So, yeah, like it, love it, leave it. I don't care. It's just fun. It's just fun. Don't take it seriously. Now, NASA is in the news again here. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration is launching a thorough study into the idea that solar storms may be the cause of massive breaching, beaching of cetacean animals. So, you know, massive strandings, the animals that kind of wash up on the shore, they're all dead. We've seen this. We've seen this a lot, especially over the last few years. Now, I've made mention of these types of stories here on the Paranormal News Insider. The aflocalypse. You might have heard that term, the aflocalypse. Well, it was one of the major top stories a few years ago, and it's always been something I've covered here. A lot of other paranormal news websites and radio shows talk about that as well. The aflocalypse, an interesting thing, and normally it's chalked up to Mother Nature. It just stuff happens, especially in the winter or the spring, whenever the seasons are changing. It's a thing called natural selection. It just happens. But NASA thinks there's something else afoot. And a lot of other people have blamed other things. Man-made climate change, sonar operations of the Navy, which is when we've heard about whales and things like that. Even pole reversals have been blamed potentially for these animals beaching themselves unintentionally. Now, again, if you look at these individually, some of these are explainable, some with disease, some maybe with the sonar operations, some with viruses or bacteria, something in the water, fishing, overfishing, or again, just natural selection. But when you look at them, when you stand back and you look at all these cases, there's a lot that we've not been able to discern what the actual cause is. And those are the ones that NASA is focusing on. Now, a NASA heliophysicist is teaming up with the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, and the International Fund for Animal Welfare, or IFAW, to determine whether a link between solar storms and these mass die-offs are related. Solar storms. Interesting. Now, the study will center on existing data of these mass stranding events as well as prior solar storms and looking for correlations and to see if there's a correlation between this. Now, the work is aimed to be completed by September of this year. Desiree Reeb, a marine biologist at BOEM's headquarters in Sterling, Virginia, said of the study, quote, The results of the study will be informative for researchers, stranding network organizers, resource agencies, and regulatory agencies. If we understand the relationship between the two, we may be able to use observations of solar storms as an early warning for potential strandings to occur. This would allow stranding responders in global hotspots and really around the world to be better prepared to respond, thus having the opportunity to save more animals, unquote. Well, a couple of thoughts on here. You may think, well, mass animal die-offs, it's got to happen all over the world, which it does. But amazingly, there are a couple of hotspots or a handful of hotspots all around the world that this happens quite frequently on. And I don't have the list in front of me, but there is about five that this happens quite frequently, a couple of times a year. So I think they're looking at geography as one of the aspects as well. They're weighing a lot of different pieces of this puzzle to make sure that they're not just going to attach something that they want to this. And they're really identifying a lot of these cases. And that's why it's taken so long to correlate all this information. But really, for me, it comes down to, I don't know how to say this, but I love wild animals too. I appreciate nature a lot, and I've had the opportunity to travel and to see animals in their natural environment. I kind of feel guilty sometimes when I'm participating and observing, because you can't observe without kind of taking something away. That's kind of a natural law, essentially. And I don't know, but I enjoy it. I enjoy seeing wild animals in nature, but I'm also in favor, you know, of the balance of nature. So yeah, I'd like to save wild animals. I think there's a lot of great things we can do. And as a kid, I used to sell different things to help the bison, when the bison were having the problems, and the humpback whales and all these things. And I took it upon myself to do what I could, a little kid, doing whatever he could to save these great creatures. But again, I'm also in favor of the balance of nature. And too many times we've tried to interfere. We've tried to create a balance, and we've tried to interfere with nature and try to restore balance. And pretty much every time we do it, I always screw something else up. It's the track record is tremendous. If you look at it, every time we try to save something, we screw something else up. So our best thing we can do is make sure that we're not doing anything to cause this in the beginning, in the forefront, and to limit that, such as creating obstructions for salmon to not be able to get upstream and then back downstream for orca whale to eat them, to not tearing up national parks and removing certain kind of animals, or introducing other animals to other places because it looks cool, or you're going to get more hunters, or whatever the case may be. Leave it alone. Every time we touch anything, we end up doing more harm than good. I don't. That's just my thought. That's just how I look at it. I mean, with this particular thing, I think it's a great idea that we do the research and we do try to figure out what is causing this, just so we know. And maybe we can kind of prevent a little bit, but to use this as a way to save every animal in the ocean, bad idea. Bad idea. Don't screw up the balance of the oceans, which we've already kind of done by overfishing too close to shore. Now we're doing it too far from shore. But I say, beyond that, I just think it's best left to the hands that are behind the strings to begin with. And that's my little political rant. That's as close as I'll get to that. So, yeah, wow, an hour. I looked down. Wow, it's over with already. So, yeah. Huh. And, yeah, episode 301 in the can. Wow. I don't really have anything for next week. I don't know what's going to happen next week. I can't predict the future. But what I can tell you is keep an eye on ParanewsInsider.com. Just updated it today. I updated it yesterday as well for events, new events up there. Check them out. It's ever evolving. It's going to continue to get bigger and bigger. And one thing I did forget here, just got a little reminder. I want to talk very, very quickly about here in the waning moments of the show is to tune in or stay tuned in. I don't care whichever one you want to do. Tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, Frank Lee and his co-host Donald Davis will be broadcasting live. Now, what could possibly go wrong on live radio? Broadcasting live from a haunted location. I'll go sacrifice a chicken. Don't worry. I'll take care of that. I didn't mean to jinx it. I'll sacrifice a chicken. They're going to be broadcasting live from a haunted location, and they're going to perform a Ghost Box versus Apps showdown tonight. The PSB7, Echovox, a lot more tonight on the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee and co-host Donald Davis right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting and WCJVRadio.com. Sounds like an interesting show. I'm going to have to try to listen to that tonight. We'll see what happens. Sounds like a good time. And again, it's an hour from now, so you have a little time to, catch up on something on Netflix or something. But make sure you're back and listen to that show. And with that, big thank you to everybody who tuned in to the chat room. I see Jim Mallard in there. I see Cheryl in there. I see Audrey's in there. I got my little magic bee, little hand thing, whatever that show is from. I don't know. Tomorrow night, too. Don't forget, 8 p.m. Eastern, Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson and her guest, Laura Sunshine, intuitive medium and spiritual advisor. Well, be there for that, too. So anyway, thank you, everybody in the chat room, and to Cindy, my producer. Obviously, thank you for the job that you do each and every night, not just for me, but for everybody else here on the network. And to Dita in the chat room, keeping all the kids in line. I appreciate it. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.